that purple tutu is just about right for us. Friends, I often find that pairing scripture with other literature and other art forms can lead to an even fuller experience than scripture on its own. Now, that might sound a little bit presumptuous, but I'm not talking about trying to improve upon scripture. I'm not talking about trying to bend it to my own will. I'm talking about taking a story that was written down thousands of years ago or maybe created many thousand years ago and laying it alongside something a little more contemporary and maybe being able to pull more meaning from both. Today we're going to do that with Natalie Bobbitt's book, Tasting, introduced to the world in 1975. It's one of those books for young readers that has a powerful message for adults. 10-year-old Winnie Foster is from a wealthy family and lives in the small town of Tree Gap, New Hampshire. Well, let me say this. In the musical, she's 11. I can't figure out why. In the book, she's 10. In the musical, she's 11. I can't imagine it's easier to rhyme 11 than it is 10. But anyhow, they say 11 in the musical. 10 or 11-year-old Winnie Foster is from a wealthy family, lives in a tiny town of Tree Gap, New Hampshire, in the late 1800s. Across the road from her house, there is a small forest known as the Wood. And the Wood belongs to Winnie Foster's family, but they never go there. Especially Winnie never goes there. In fact, Winnie doesn't get to do much of anything on her own. She lives under the eagle eyes of her mother and grandmother, who are constantly watching out for her, constantly worried about her. And we're going to let her tell you a little bit about herself.
I'm trapped in a house of sad and lonely on a street named Main, but you could call it only. Is it rude to say I'd volunteer for a day of fun just once a year? I'd fly the coop if only I could. But I've got a really bad case of being good. I'd go find trouble if there was some to get in. Ask a friend to play if I had one to let in. Nana's rocker sawing through the floor every day just like the one before. We lock ourselves behind that door. Is it wrong to wish for something more? Good girl Winnie Foster.
Winnie.
Every day is in bed at 7. Every day is a well-behaved 11. Some days I want a raise, a little something more than heaven. Some days I want a raise, a little something more than heaven.
Poor Winnie, every day stretching out just like the one before, feels like forever, but inside she really wants to do something big and something important, and she starts to think about running away. But the problem with running away is that you do it alone, and Winnie doesn't want to do anything alone. She doesn't want to be alone. So instead of running away, she decides she will explore the wood. It belongs to her family. It's right there across the road from her house. So one morning, she walks into the wood. She's walked a little way, decides it's quite a lovely place. And there, she sees, sitting on the ground, a young boy. And he is beautiful. And she loves him immediately. His name is Jesse Tuck, and he's 17. And we find out that every 10 years, on the first day of August, he meets his brother Miles in that wood at that particular place. And together they go home to visit their parents. Today is a little bit different because Jesse got there first. His brother Miles is close by, and May has decided, rather than waiting on her sons, whom she only sees every 10 years, she's going to go down to the woods herself so that she can meet her boys. Jesse, sitting on the ground, Winnie, besotted. Winnie introduces herself and asks Jesse for a drink from the spring. "I'm very thirsty," she says. And Jesse says, "Oh, no. It's not good. It's coming up out of the ground. It's probably dirty. No." But Winnie's pretty insistent. She continues to insist she would like some of that water. At that moment, May Tuck, Jesse's mother, and Miles, Jesse's brother, arrive. And when they see the scene, Jesse talking to someone they do not know, they are a little bit anxious. And their first thought is, has Jesse told Winnie the secret of the spring? For that would be a disaster of tremendous proportion. They find out that Jesse hasn't told the story yet, but they don't feel safe. And they know that what they need to do is take Winnie Foster home to their house so that Pa, Angus Tucker, can tell Winnie about the spring in a way that she can understand. So the three Tucks decide to take Winnie to their house 20 miles outside of Tree Gap. In other words, they kidnap her. All of them are in a panic about Winnie and the spring, and they need time and distance to figure out what to do. Along the way, they tell the story of the Tucks.
Once upon a time, can I start like that?
Shouldn't start like that.
Be patient with me, Winnie. I've never told this before. Once there was a man with a wife and a family.
That's Miles and me.
Jesse, let me tell the story. I don't want to start a war. We toured from the west to settle in the east, looking for a farm or some land at least.
Get to the part where I fall from the tree.
No, you're telling all wrong.
Miles, Jesse, then we found a wood.
Yes, we found a wood. Can you guess which wood?
Mine?
You're good.
Where we found ourselves a clearing and camped for the night. Just the four of us.
Plus the cat and the horse. They play a crucial part.
Yes, Miles, of course. We slept by a spring near an old ash tree.
And that's where I carved tea.
Jesse.
In the morning.
We had no way of knowing. Without even thinking, we drank from the spring. Who knew that spring could change everything?
Except for the horse. Everybody drank, even the cats.
Remember that.
You can lead a horse to water.
I think she knows the phrase.
So days went by, months and years, lived an ordinary life.
So it appears.
The old horse died at 25.
But the cat was still alive.
We weren't changing.
We weren't changing. We weren't growing.
We had no way of knowing.
Nobody was thinking. It's because of the spring. Who knew that spring would change everything?
The town began to talk.
Winnie, look at me. Winnie, listen
here.
People
shied away. They were so outraged. We had an age. Our lives impious.
I survived a free fall. He survived much worse.
Shut up, Jesse.
So we didn't know.
Yes, of course we knew.
Spring
was the limit
for where we'd sit on the delicate balance.
The greatest family
in the
universe.
Don't confuse the girl, the cat, and the horse.
The tea on the tree. The drink that changed us eternally. That's our secret, keep it locked up tight.
I still don't understand.
Enough, all right. We're not aging, we're not growing, and none of us know why. Once upon a time, we drank from your spring. and now we'll never die.
And that's the story of the tux. The end.
Once upon a time, 80 years before, they drank from the stream. And now they'll never die. That forever wasn't hyperbole. After they tell Winnie the story, May says, "Winnie, now you share our big secret. And it's a big and dangerous secret. And we got to help you to keep it. I expect you're full of questions, so we'll take you home to Tuck, Angus Tuck. He'll want to talk it out and make sure you see why you can't tell no one. And we'll bring you back tomorrow." And the three of them looked at Winnie hopefully to see if that was all right, that she was being kidnapped. "All right," said Winnie, because she wasn't scared anymore. She was running away after all, but she was not alone. She was with her friends. Well, they made it to the house, and Angus Tuck, though he was plenty concerned about Winnie knowing the secret of the spring, was also overjoyed to have a visitor. As soon as he had a chance, he took Winnie out on the water in the little pond by the house, put her in his little rowboat, and took her out into the pond. It was his duty, he felt, more than any others, to help Winnie understand why she couldn't tell anyone about the spring. As he pulled at the oars, he pointed out over the water and said, "Winnie, you know what this is all around us? It's life, Winnie. It's moving and growing and changing and never the same 2 minutes together. This water. We look out at it every morning and it looks the same, but it ain't. All night long it's been moving, always quiet, always new, moving on. And someday after a long while, it comes to the ocean. And then you know what happens?" asked Tuck. "To the water, the sun sucks some of it right up into the clouds and it carries the rest. And it keeps on moving. It's a wheel, Winnie Foster. Everything's a wheel, turning and turning, never stopping. And people, too. Always coming in new, always growing and changing and always moving on. That's the way it's supposed to be." "But," said Tuck, this rowboat, it's stuck. If I didn't move it with the oars, it would stay here forever trying to get loose, but stuck. And that's what us Tucks are, Winnie. Stuck. And we can't move on. And we ain't part of the wheel no more. We've dropped off, Winnie. We got left behind. And everywhere around us, things is moving and growing and changing. You, for instance, Winnie Foster, you're a child now, but someday a woman. And then one day, you will make room for more children. Winnie was quite distraught. And suddenly it hit her what he was saying. For she, yes, even she, Winnie Foster, she would go out of the world willy-nilly someday. Just go out like the flame of a candle and no use protesting. It was a certainty. She was going to try very hard not to think about it. But sometimes, as now, it would be forced upon her. "I don't want to die," she said. "No," said Tuck calmly, "not now. Your time's not now, but dying's part of the wheel. Right there next to being born, you can't pick out the pieces that you like and leave the rest. Being part of the whole thing, Winnie, that's the blessing. But it's passing us by, us Tucks. Living's heavy work, but off to one side the way we are, it's useless too. It don't make sense. If I knowed how to climb back on the wheel, I'd do it in a minute. You can't have living without dying, so you can't call it living what we've got. We just are. We just be. We're like rocks beside the road. And Tuck's voice was loud and rough, and Winnie, amazed, sat rigid. No grown-ups had ever talked to her of things like this before. I want to grow again, Tuck said fiercely, and change. And if that means I got to move on at the end of it, then I want to. Listen, Winnie, it's something you don't know how you feel about until after. If people knowed about the spring down there in Tree Gap, they'd all come running like pigs to slop. They'd trample each other, trying to get some of that water. And that'd be bad enough, but afterwards, can you imagine all the little ones live forever? All the little ones little forever? All the old ones old forever? Can you picture what that means? Forever? The wheel would keep on going around. The water rolling by to the ocean, but the people would have turned into nothing but rocks beside the road. Because they wouldn't know till after they drank. And then it'd be too late. He stared into her. Winnie, do you see now, child? Do you understand? Oh, Lord, I just got to make you understand about the water and the spring. He's a desperate man, isn't he? And Tuck is, he's stuck. Just like he said, he's not changing, not growing, every single day the same. Friends, it's a sentiment that's expressed in the book of Ecclesiastes. The writer of Ecclesiastes talks about the stuckness of life, about its meaninglessness and its vanity. Now, you've heard these words before, maybe in Sunday school, maybe in a Bible study, probably on the radio. And I heard some of them just now from Amanda. For everything, there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to throw away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. Friends, the writer of Ecclesiastes is depressed. I read and reread the whole book in the hopes that I could find the portion where the author finds hope, ideally where the author finds hope in God. And I loved how Amanda said it to the children, because she wants them to know there's always hope in God. But I am telling you, I looked through that book several times, and it's simply not there. It gets close a few times, talking about the love of God and hope and all that. It gets close. And a preacher who's desperately searching for a sermon hook could probably find it. But it wasn't there. I think it wasn't there because of the story of the author of Ecclesiastes. Historians and theologians believe that it was King Solomon, King David's son with Bathsheba, who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon was in his time both the wisest and richest man in all Israel. Yet his life lacked meaning. Careful readers of Ecclesiastes tell us that Solomon, in writing Ecclesiastes, is looking back over his wasted years and he finds no joy in them, only futility, vanity, and chasing after the wind. He concludes that everything is meaningless. And what's truly tragic about Solomon's life is that it hadn't always been that way. He had once loved God in the way that his father David did, but over time, Solomon brought hundreds of wives and concubines from pagan nations into his household, and he began to worship their gods instead of the true God of Israel. Solomon completely abandoned the worship of the one true God. So with all this swirling around us this morning, where can we find hope? If it's not in the book of Ecclesiastes, well, where can we find hope? We can find it in the pages of Tuck Everlasting. I will end this morning where the book begins. This is from the prologue. All wheels must have a hub. A Ferris wheel has one, as the sun is the hub of the wheeling calendar. Fixed points they are, and best left undisturbed, for without them, nothing holds together. But sometimes people found this out too late. All wheels must have a hub. Remember what Tuck said about life being like a wheel? If I knowed how to climb back on the wheel, I'd do it in a minute. You can't have living without dying, so you can't call it living what we got. We just are. We just like rocks beside the road. Forever is not the problem that Tuck has. Living forever is not the problem that Tuck has. It's the choice that Tuck has made about how to live. Ultimately, we choose. Just like Winnie ultimately had to choose in the book. Because Winnie's not only besotted with Jesse, he's besotted with her. And so he takes her a little bottle of the spring water, and he says, Winnie, in another few years, when you turn 17, you can drink the water, and then you'll be the same as me, and then we'll get married and live forever. The choice belongs to Winnie.
6 years from now, you will turn 17. Turn 17, the same age as me. 6 years from now, go to the spring, go to the spring, and drink. I'll wait for you till you turn 17. Turn 17, the same age as me. 6 years from now, go to the spring, go to the spring, and drink. Winnie, wait with me, we could be married. Winnie, wait with me, and we'll share the world. Winnie, you can stop time and live like this forever. Winnie, do you want to live forever?
Forever!
Friends, every day is our forever. Every day we make a choice about how we will live our forever. This day, this hour, this moment, it's our forever. So what choices will you make? Will God be the hub of your day and your existence? Because it's your choice. Will you live like Winnie, a child with a child's enthusiasm, desiring to do something big and important and taking tiny little steps each day towards that goal? Will you live like Jesse, caught in a 17-year-old's desires, and live for yourself only and your own pleasure? Will you live like May? After all this time, she keeps looking forward to things with great pleasure. Things like the return home of her sons every 10 years and the sound of a music box that she treasures. Or will you live like Tuck, despondent and giving up? Now, please don't hear me saying that things like depression and addiction don't impact the equation, because they do. But even in the struggle, we can cling to that hub, to that center, or we can let the people who care about us cling to that center for us, to that handhold that keeps us from spinning off into meaninglessness. We don't have to drift into the trap that catches Tuck. Because you see, actually, most of us live every day pretty much the same way, right? The same structures of routine, waking up at the same time, going to the same workplace, interacting with the same people, going to sleep in the same bed each evening. It can feel like we're stuck, not growing, not changing. What we should remember is that we have the power to change ourselves every day. We have the opportunity to speak and act in ways that contribute to the care and the happiness of others. We have the opportunity to choose our center. And I want to leave you just with a few more words of hope. I always find it one of the great ironies that some of the most hopeful words in all of Scripture come from a book called Lamentations. From the third chapter, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. God's mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. New every morning. Great is your faithfulness, O God.